Hey, everybody. A new study shows that 40%, 39% actually, millennials are LGBTQ. That would mean that this is the gayest generation in American history. So what does that mean for your children and for your grandchildren? And is this a good thing, a bad thing? We unpack that. Also, what percentage of young people believe in God? And so much more. If you want to support our show, you could do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get behind the work we are doing, I want to thank Richard from Oregon. Thank you. I want to thank Elizabeth from Maryland. Thank you. Bradley from Colorado. Thank you. Connie from Georgia. Thank you. Jason from California. Thank you. Miranda from New Mexico. Thank you. Richard from South Carolina. Thank you. Keith from Arizona. Thank you. Denise from New Hampshire, thank you. Kimberly from Alabama, thank you. Debbie from Ohio and Wyoma from Florida. charliekirk.com/support. Thank you for supporting us in all the work that we are doing. It helps us hire more staff and stay strong against all of the threats of cancellation. So thank you, thank you, thank you for getting behind us and help us in our mission to try to reach millions of young people every single month. Thank you in helping us reach our mission of reaching millions of young people every single month. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war, you can go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter, start a college chapter today at tpusa.com. And if you want to come to America Fest, AmFest, tpusa.com/AMFEST. That's tpusa.com/AMFEST. Which is December 18, December 19, December 20, and 21 of the biggest and best speakers you can imagine. We have Tucker Carlson coming, Ted Cruz coming, Kayleigh McEnany, Jesse Waters, Jim Jordan, Candace Owens, Donald Trump Jr., Madison Cawthorn, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Sean Foyt, and so much more. And now we have, happy to announce, Brantley Gilbert and Dustin Lynch performing at America Fest, Russell Dickerson, Adam Doliak, Raylan Lee Greenwood, and DJ Silver. tpusa.com/AMFEST. The new studies are out. 39% of young people are LGBTQ. What does that mean? Also, how many of them believe in God? Also, we have Gordon Chang later in the episode. Update us on China. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I want to start this hour off with a study that was done by Arizona Christian University. They do this study every single year, and it's nonpartisan in nature, and it's just surveying millennials, young people, increasingly older. Obviously, everyone gets older, and kind of what their stance is on the world, on themselves. And before I go into this, I just want to say there are some numbers in this document that are shocking, even for someone who deals with young people, beyond shocking. And I hope that every single parent out there and grandparent thinks and prays deeply about what I'm about to share with you. What I'm about to share with you in this document should be a fire alarm. It should be a call to urgency. Because if these trends don't fix, if these trends don't correct themselves, the country will fall apart in a decade. And that's not me being doom and gloom. If these numbers are true. So let's start with this one. I find this incredibly hard to believe. 39% of 18 to 24-year-olds in America identify as lesbian or gay or bisexual. 39%. You know, this was kind of the great lie of the gay movement, wasn't it? which was like, oh, yeah, we just have to give equal rights, and then it's just going to be a non-issue. Then why is it that more people in every generation are identifying as gay? Why is that? 39% of 18 to 24-year-olds identify as LGBTQ. 39%. Only one-third of millennials claim to believe in God. One-third of millennials. A record-breaking number of 40% of young adults say that they have a don't perspective. People who don't know if God exists, don't care if God exists, and don't believe that he exists. 40% of millennials surveyed, according to this study, call themselves very liberal or progressive when 29% say they are conservative. Further, those who think of themselves as Democrats outnumber those who identify as Republican by a 2-to-1 margin. Continue by saying that in this study by Arizona Christian University, 3 out of 4 millennials said that they are still searching for their purpose in life. Well, that's pretty obvious because we sent so many millennials to college, which is a place where your soul and your dreams largely go to die. Issues listed by millennials that have little importance, 2% importance, income inequality and redistribution, rule of law, media standards. The most important issue for millennials, think about this. This is how propaganda is there. The number one most important issue is coronavirus management. For a generation, you know, I've actually found this. I find that some young people are way more worried about the Fauci virus than people over the age of 60 because they've been raised in a generation of fear, obviously. Climate change, second most important issue for millennials. Third one, racial discrimination. Give me a break. Fourth, abortion. And fifth, the economy. Most millennials, according to this study, reject the existence of absolute moral truth. A majority admit to feeling daily anxious, depressed, or fearful. So basically, you have the most liberal, the most depressed generation, but I have to say, this study is actually very confirming for me and for our show. You might say, Charlie, how could you say that? Well, they're the most miserable, they're the least godly generation in American history, and they're the most depressed. Obviously, you have no relationship with the transcendent or with God. You're going to be depressed, anxious, and fearful. You don't know your place in the world. 3 out of 4 millennials say they don't know their place in life. It's because we've decided to destroy God in society. As America has become more secular, it has become less free. What is life worth sacrificing for? Only 26% of millennials say that your country, America, is worth sacrificing for. 26% of millennials say that they would sacrifice anything for their country. 26. Only 41% say that they would sacrifice anything for their freedoms. Satisfaction with life elements. Only 29% of millennials say that they are satisfied with their life. 29%. Whereas 31% say they are not satisfied with their life. The country, being an American, 15% of millennials say they are proud to be an American. 15% say they are proud to be an American. As I mentioned, one-third of millennials describe themselves as being LGBTQ, 39%. 39%. It's 3 times the proportion identified among the combined older adults in the generation. This is the gayest generation in American history. And that's not a slur, by the way. It's not a slander. It's just the way it is. Someone's going to say, oh, that's a pejorative. They're the gayest generation in American history. It's what the study says. How about capitalism? Now, this is actually not awful, I guess. Well, it's actually really bad. But in 2017... 44% say they preferred socialism to communism. That's 2017. 2018, 49% say they preserve socialism to communism. This one, 48. So it went down a point. 4 out of 10 young adults, according to this study, say they are liberal on social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage, while 3 out of 10 say they hold a conservative view on those matters. Specifically, the study shows that people 18 to 37 are less likely than their elders to feel proud to be an American, believe in and obey the United States Constitution, express a personal willingness to die and protect for our freedoms, accept America's enemies as their enemies, join the military to defend the nation if called upon to do so, and consider themselves to be extremely or very patriotic. Ideology and politics. Reactions to political terminology. 37% have a negative view of the United States of America. 29% have a negative view of conservatives. Millennials have a higher positive viewpoint of socialism, the term socialism, than conservatives. 20% of millennials say climate change and global warming is the top issue. 20% say that racial and ethnic discrimination is the top issue. And 10% say discrimination regarding sexual orientation or gender identity. 27% say they do not associate with any religious faith or tradition. It is the least Christian, least godly generation in American history, which is why they're so miserable. 31% have a neutral view of atheism. In fact, this generation, millennials, have a more positive view of atheism than Jesus Christ and the Bible. Millennials have guarded trust towards Christian pastors. How can you blame them when you see the pastors, most pastors in America, not the pastors we deal with at Turning Point Faith? They're amazing. Negative view ratio towards Christian pastors. We're going to keep diving into this. I think it's super interesting, and we're going to answer the question, why? The answer is super obvious. It's the most college-educated generation in American history, the least married, least likely to own property, the least godly, the most depressed, and the most miserable. Maybe some of those things can explain it. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. You could stop imagining because it's a reality. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat is stealing their businesses and robbing you of the quality and flavor that you deserve. That's why Good Ranchers is here. They exist to support local American farms that help you make great American meals. Together, they restore the American ranch and your meals to the former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that can't be imported or matched at GoodRanchers.com. GoodRanchers.com completes three basic needs. Number one, you have to eat. Number two, you want to support the country. Number three, support the Charlie Kirk Show. Did you know the product of USA tag has been stolen by foreign countries? Because of the foreign labeling laws that favor foreign imported meat, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches have closed since 2015. Support American beef and meat, everybody. Good Ranchers is here to put America numero uno first at the dinner table and farmers that work to raise the meat we eat. So get a box of meat delivered straight to your home. And last week, Good Ranchers upgraded their website to handle the traffic that came from the listeners of this show. Thank you for supporting Good Ranchers. They support us. If you had trouble ordering last week, GoodRanchers.com is back and better than ever with an extra special limited time offer. Just go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie right now and get 10 free bistro fillets, and even better, subscribe and save $25 on each box of mouth-watering American meats for life that will show up on schedule right to your door. That's right. Get 10 free bistro fillets. That's $100 value and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Charlie or use code Charlie at checkout. That's 10 free bistro fillets, free express shipping, and $25 off your subscription for life at goodranchers.com/Charlie. Support the show, support the country, and eat well. goodranchers.com/Charlie. Arizona Christian University did a study with millennials. Now, I don't look, I'm going to be very clear. I find it very hard to believe that 40% of millennials are gay. Okay, I just find that really hard to believe. Let's pretend it's half right. 20%? 10%? 10% would be extraordinary, by the way. I think that one Gen Z one showed 1 in 5. Is that right? That's what the NBC one said. So some of these numbers could be a little off, but some of these numbers could be rather instructive. 63% of millennials lean on personal emotions, past experience, and the advice of others when making moral choices. No wonder why they're so miserable. They're looking to themselves for all the answers when all the answers are right there for you. There's been a lot of scholarship done before you were born. You're not the most important thing in the world. This is the amazing one. Millennials are half as likely as adults to say that life is sacred. Millennials do not have as much respect for human beings as adults do from other generations. Millennials are significantly less likely to believe that God is the basis of truth, to believe the Bible is a reliable source of moral guidance, to say that they have a unique purpose from God. They do not accept the idea of original sin, which I've been saying at our show for quite some time. They do not believe that you should try to avoid sin. They do not accept the Bible as the inerrant word of God. This is like 60-70% of millennials, by the way. They do not pray during a typical week. They do not believe that Satan is real and influential. And they do not define success as consistent obedience to God. They're less likely than prior generations. Millennials are twice as likely to say that people they always respect are ones who hold the same religious political views as they do. So it's becoming this kind of self-radicalization circle. Now, amazingly, before every baby boomer starts to lecture how awful millennials are, do you know, according to this, only 50% of boomers think human life is sacred? Where 19% think that human life is sacred? 19%. Unbelievable. 45% of millennials think that God is really involved in their life, 57% of boomers. The faith gap between millennials and the two earlier generations is the widest intergenerational difference identified at any time in the last seven decades. So who do millennials trust? Well, here is where it all comes through. Millennials trust their parents. So obviously their parents have not been doing a good job of passing down their values. They trust their friends. That's a bad idea. They trust college professors the third most. That college professors have a profound impact on their worldview. College professors, 27% always or almost always, and 39% sometimes have a profound impact on how a millennial views the world. So you put this together. Again, I find it very hard to believe that 40% of these millennials identify as gay, lesbian, LGBT. I find that very hard to believe. 3 out of 4 millennials say that they are anxious, depressed, or fearful every day. And only 1/3 of millennials say they believe in God. 1/3. Yes, there is a direct correlation here. There's a God-sized hole in your heart. When you start to rebel against it, what are you going to fill it with? Well, they're the most drug-addicted generation in American history, the most suicidal, the most miserable, least directed, least purposeful, least married. And if you have a millennial in your life and you're a parent or grandparent, you got to take time out and say, man, we've done something terribly wrong here. Not to mention the socioeconomic political circumstances we've been handing down to younger generations. Indebtedness, crime, sexual anarchy, all these different sorts of things. And for the millennials out there that are listening to this or the young people, you can make your life better. You can make a choice. You have a choice. Let me say that again. You have a choice every day to wake up and to renew your mind, as it says in the scriptures, to go pursue purpose, meaning, and truth. Philippians 4:8, whatever is true, whatever is good, whatever is noble, whatever is beautiful, think on those things. It's a beautiful piece of scripture. Make no mistake, as Nietzsche said, God is dead. He was forecasting the downfall of the West. He saw something. He said the West was going to fall apart if we destroy God. And he was right. When did we decide to stop upholding free speech as a basic right? What's playing out right now at so many big tech companies and social media sites set a very dangerous precedent. Look, it doesn't matter what your politics are or who you voted for. Everyone should have the right to express themselves freely. Sadly, the big tech oligarchs and their monopoly has instead opted for silencing people and censorship. To fight back against big tech's control of the internet, I use ExpressVPN. Ever wondered how free-to-access tech giants make all their money? Well, by tracking your searches, they sell you. They build a profile on you, and they sell your sensitive data. When you use ExpressVPN and their wonderful app on your computer or phone, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address. That makes your activity more difficult to trace and to sell to advertisers. What's more, is ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. What I like most is how easy it is to use. It takes just one click to protect all your devices. That's why ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET. So let's stop allowing big tech to revoke our rights to free speech. Why not revoke their right to your data instead? Secure your internet with the VPN that I trust, the only VPN that I use. Visit expressvpn.com/Charlie. That's expressvpn.com/Charlie to get 3 extra months free with my exclusive link. Go to expressvpn.com/Charlie right now to learn more. With us now is the foremost expert on China. He's terrific. He is the author of The Great U.S.-China Tech War, and it is Gordon Chang. And Gordon, are you with us now?
I am, Charlie, and thank you so much.
You bet. You do a wonderful job, and talk about our enemy, China, and you have been on the cutting edge of this for quite some time. So let's talk about this breaking news here. China war games with the United States targets in secret desert site. What is going on with the Chinese Communist Party militarily right now? It seems like they're ramping up, and I'm not really sure what we're doing domestically militarily. That's a separate issue. So give us the insight, give us the breaking news of what's happening from the Chinese Communist Party militarily.
The breaking news is that satellite image has seen an aircraft carrier and a destroyer, a replica, in China's Xinjiang in the northwest part of the country, used for target practice. This has occurred before, where China has built replicas of U.S. Navy ships. And so, to a certain extent, this is Groundhog Day, but the American people are starting to pay attention, and that is what is the news. And the broader context, Charlie, is that China's involved in the perhaps the world's fastest military buildup, certainly the fastest since the Third Reich. And we know from history that when militant regimes build up their militaries like this, they always use them in acts of aggression.
That's definitely true. Do you anticipate China making a move towards Taiwan in the coming months? It sure seems that that's what some of the rumblings and intelligence is showing.
It could be coming months. It could be after the Olympics, which start in February of next year. Or it could be India, could be Japan, could be any other country that borders China, because we know that China believes that it should be much larger than it is today. And in fact, Chinese leader Xi Jinping has been hinting that he should be ruling the world. Chinese officials since 2018 have been saying that the moon and Mars should be considered sovereign Chinese territory. This is the most ambitious regime in history.
That it sure seems that way. So, but what is the United States doing to stop them? It seems very little. We have Mark Milley that gives heads up to the Chinese Communist Party military in case there might be some sort of military strike. It seems that we have an appeasement strategy with China, and meanwhile they're conducting combat readiness patrols in the Taiwan Straits. And I agree with you on the Olympics. People forget that Putin, after the Sochi Olympics, I think back in when was that? That was like
2014, I think.
He did something like that in Crimea right afterwards. If I remember correctly, there was a correlation with that. He wanted that to pass. And then he, if I'm not mistaken, is that right?
You are absolutely correct about that. Russia seized Crimea in 2014. Yeah. And then immediately after that, started to pressure the Donbass, which is eastern Ukraine. So they were redrawing the map of Europe by force after the Olympics. China could very well do the same thing. Right now, Beijing is just unbelievably aggressive. And we also know that inside there have been internal problems, not only at the top of the Communist Party, but there are all sorts of crises. So the country is on the boil. And this means that something is probably going to happen. And we, I think in Washington, as you point out, we don't have an appreciation of that. So I think we could be very well taken by surprise, because we've got a military leadership and we've got a political leadership that fundamentally misunderstands China.
So if you, what is the proper way to understand them? They have internationalist ambitions. You said it's the most ambitious regime we've seen. Belt and Road Initiative, the Confucius Institutes, hacking of the cyber grid, building of islands in the South China Sea, not to mention the manufacturing of the virus, allegedly, that came from a laboratory, which I think is the greatest open joke. We almost know certainly it came from a laboratory. Whether it was deployed intentionally or not, we don't know. What is the proper way to view this regime? Because we hear from some people in the business elite and kind of the metropolitan crew here in America, they're our friends, they're our allies, we need to endlessly trade with them. What is the proper position towards China?
We should consider them an enemy. They're more than just an adversary, certainly more than a competitor that Biden talks about. And we should remember that they will employ the most malicious, murderous tactics available. You know, you mentioned coronavirus. Well, one thing we do know, Charlie, and that is that China took steps in the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020 to deliberately spread this disease beyond China's borders.
Yes.
They lied about contagiousness. They forced countries to take arrivals from China while they were locking down their own country. You put those two things together. This means that those 5,034,000 deaths outside of China, that's murder.
Well, I mean, I completely agree. So can you talk a little bit about how China has taken a different approach than the Soviet Union? The Soviet Union was largely walled off economically. They still had some obvious internationalist goals and ambitions, whether it be in Rhodesia or in Cuba or Afghanistan. But China's seemed to have learned from the Soviet Union where they want to actually infiltrate the actual DNA of the American economy, from Wall Street elites to Hollywood to athletics, which makes it really hard for us to actually be able to build a domestic coalition against them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You're absolutely right. China has tried to subvert every institution. And we're not talking just about governments. We're talking about businesses, universities, NGOs, all sorts of institutions.
Yes.
And Beijing has devoted enormous amounts of money and resources to this. Remember that the first time that they contacted Eric Swalwell was not when he was sitting on the House Intelligence Committee, where, of course, he'd be of value to Beijing. They first contacted him when he was on the city council of Dublin City, California. So that means that there must be hundreds, thousands of contacts that China's been making at a very low level on the hope that the individuals that they're courting will someday be powerful. And of course, in the case of Swalwell, they were very successful because he became successful. And that means that our society from top to bottom has been penetrated.
Well, and Swalwell was never held to justice for what he did, allegedly sleeping with Fang Fang. I think that's pretty well, that's as well known as the laboratory virus leak. So now, Gordon, in the 5 minutes we have remaining, I want to shift to more of an optimistic part of the story. Optimistic might be a little too ambitious, but I'm old enough to remember you wrote a book that said The Coming Collapse of China. Can you talk a little bit about that? Where is this regime vulnerable? Because every regime has weak spots. Where are they the weakest? Where are they the most paranoid?
Right now, the weakest is their debt crisis. They got through the 2008 downturn with this massive spending spree. Well, they're now starting to have to pay for it. And we see this with the crisis regarding Evergrande, the property developer, mm-hmm. which by itself owes $305 billion, staggering amount. We have seen defaults and missed bond payments. This is, I think, their number one weakness. But they got a lot of others. For instance, they've got accelerated COVID-19 outbreaks. They can't control that. They've got worsening food shortages, an environment that is at the point of exhaustion. The list goes on. And the reason why all these things are important and relevant to us is that I believe that Chinese leaders are seeing a closing window of opportunity, that if they don't move now, they will not be able to in the future because they won't be strong enough. Remember, they are at the edge of the steepest demographic decline in history in the absence of war or disease. They will lose about half their population in 45 years, according to Chinese demographers. They will lose 2/3 of their population by the end of this century. They've got to move quickly. And that means we're not prepared right now because we're not thinking about China in the proper terms.
So your argument is that this is more of an immediate threat than a long-term threat, which kind of bucks the consensus among some of the smart people that say, oh, yeah, China's going to be for your grandchildren to deal about in 60 years. You're saying, no, it's the opposite because of one-child policy and because of population control that was employed in the 60s and 70s. You're talking a generational demographic cliff that makes the baby boomers in America look like child's play, right? Is that correct?
Right. I believe that the risk is now, and we need to get through this risk in the next few years. We got a Pentagon, for instance, Charlie, and this is an important point you raise. They are seeing the maximum China threat starting in about 2027, going through about 2035. And so, therefore, they want to take planes, the older planes, and take them out of the inventory so they can pay for modernization for the next generation of weapons. I think that's wrong. They're going to need every A-10, every KC-10, every old plane that they have. And that's true for the Navy as well. They're not planning for, I think, the period of maximum vulnerability right now. And that means we can be taken by surprise. And they can beat us. We're a much stronger nation, but we're not defending ourselves. We're not looking at the Chinese regime in the right way.
Well, and then we gave up Afghanistan completely, $85 billion of weaponry to the Taliban that largely, that probably just kind of got handed over to the Chinese Communist Party. So what action steps must we take to decouple ourselves from China? Because I'm sure a lot of Americans don't have an appetite for war, but I think the absence of conflict could actually draw us into war.
Yeah. One of the things I think we need to do is cut investment into China. We need to stop technical cooperation agreements. I mean, we taught Chinese researchers how to manipulate coronaviruses to make them more dangerous to humanity. And we're still cooperating with the biotech labs in China that are linked to the military. We need to end all of that. We have to stop China from buying our tech companies. I think we need to stop buying a lot of stuff from China. I'd like to see a complete cutoff of trade.
I agree.
Because we should not be giving them, you know, we should cut off the blood supply to those who mean us harm.
Well, I mean, that's the least that we should do. And the tension point, Gordon, where I think we have to focus our attention is the rich people in America. They've become infinitely wealthy off of these public-private partnerships designed by McKinsey, whether it be in Hollywood or the National Basketball Association, Goldman Sachs, Walmart. You're drawing the biggest companies in America and most of the tech companies as well. Facebook is the only one that has really kind of not played on the Chinese turf as of yet because they're just not welcome there. That you have the wealthiest people in America that they want to keep on getting endlessly powerful and rich off that. I think that has to be one of our focal points. And it has to be grassroots. It has to be bottom up.
Absolutely. We've got a political class, a business elite that are basically supporting the communist China
yes.
over the American democracy. So this is what I think you said. Thumbs up.
I love it. Well, Gordon, thank you. We have to have you back soon. And you are the author of The Great U.S.-China Tech War. Everyone, go buy a copy. Hope to see you soon. Thanks so much, Gordon. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Lately, I've been sounding the alarm about why we all need to be well prepared in case the worst happens anytime soon. No, I'm not an alarmist. I'm a realist. Charlie Kirk here. I've been personally preparing myself and my family, and I hope you have too, because the way things are going, it's not looking good. And none of us should ever gamble with our family's well-being. That's why I strongly endorse My Patriot Supply as the go-to source for your family's emergency preparedness products. You'll find more than just emergency food. MyPatriotSupply.com carries about everything you'll need for the challenging times ahead. Plus, your order will be shipped quickly, much faster than the competition can. So go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get what you need quickly. They have food in stock, ready to ship, in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Don't wait and suffer the pain of regret. Things are falling apart, everybody, and you need to make sure you could feed your family if the worst occurs. I'm a prepper, and you need to prepare too. MyPatriotSupply.com today. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. We actually have one more campus tour coming up at University of Arizona for our Exposing Critical Racism Theory Tour. And I think we've had a lot of success. Actually, I know we've had a lot of success packing out auditoriums, thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming in attendance, not to mention the millions of people online that are being reached. And I'm asked often by the apparatchiks on the left where they say, Charlie, what is CRT in practice? Okay, it's bad. Let me show you an example of CRT in practice. Let me show you where our country is headed. FoxBusiness.com. One of the world's largest investment firms will need permission to hire white men. Leaders at one of the largest investment firms in the world, State Street Global Advisors, will need to ask permission to hire white men as it rolls out a diversity hiring initiative. This is now front and center at State Street. It's on every senior executive scorecard. All of our leaders have to demonstrate at their annual appraisals what they have done to improve female representation and the number of colleagues from ethnic minority backgrounds. Not competency, not honesty, not integrity, not commitment to the company. No. Skin color and your chromosomal makeup. It's kind of weird. I thought females are just a construct. So why care about that? I thought gender is fluid. The company aims to triple the number of Black, Asian, and other minority. Hold on, let's stop. Asians are far richer than white people in America. Asians are significantly wealthier. So why do you have to try to triple the number of Asians? Trying to help the people that are already rich? Do you see how dangerous tribalism is? It's honestly sloppy and it's disgusting. And it's anti-white, of course it is. If executives don't meet their target, they will face lowered bonuses. The firm will still hire white men, don't worry, McNicholas said, but recruiters are required to show that women and minority applicants were interviewed by the panels. The company is pledging to, quote, hold ourselves accountable for strengthening Black and Latinx-owned businesses. Oh, it says it's Boston right here. State Street was founded in 1792 and currently has 40,000 employees over 30 offices nationwide. State Street previously made headlines in 2017, where it commissioned the statue of a girl staring down Wall Street's charging bull sculpture for International Women's Day. Needless to say, if you use State Street, you should probably stop using them. Recruiters will now have to establish panels of 4 to 5 employees, including a woman and a person with a minority background. So you want to say, Charlie, what's wrong with critical race theory? How about this? You need permission to hire white men now. If you are a white man out there, State Street is saying, we don't want you. If you are a white person listening to what I'm saying right now, sure looks increasingly like society is trying to design measures and protocol and hiring practices and college admissions to discriminate against you. And that's exactly what Ibram X. Kendi has said. Discrimination today to try to atone for discrimination yesterday. The other story I wanted to get to, I just find it hilarious when San Francisco starts to justify the dystopia they've created. San Francisco Chronicle issued a new story that says burglaries are simply a part of city living. Get used to it when your stuff is stolen. Now, here's my question, though. If this is really true, why is the FBI deployed to go find Ashley Biden's diary? It's a part of city living, Ashley Biden. Get used to it. The paper's shocking statement comes as the Democrat-run California city continues to experience skyrocketing crime. And the San Francisco Chronicle says, get used to it. Suck it up. It's part of city living. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you could do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.